College. Chris Narjan, who is the Director of Office Workforce Development, and Amanda Karsh, who is their Director of Community Engagement. At Columbia Green, the Executive Committee is going to meet with all three of them tomorrow. We've managed to get on the number calendar like 3 weeks ago. So tomorrow's our meeting with that team. And we're also finding time to meet with Dr. Dorothy Urschel, President and CEO of Columbia Memorial Hospital, and Brianna Scully, who's Director of Human Resources and a job, her title is Job Recruitment. So we were introduced to them by Kirk Neller, who's President of the Columbia Memorial Hospital Board.
Can you find out what they're doing about childcare at the hospital for their staff?
That's on our agenda. Cool. Yeah, absolutely. So he feels, he made the introduction at his board meeting, and they felt that this would be a good beginning to begin to talk about what we do and what they want to do. So that's the second one. And then, as you remember, the child care is a huge issue that we discussed at other board members. It impacts families and workers in Hudson. And Missy and I have meetings to help us begin to learn about the state of child care services or where it's lacking with people in this field. We were scheduled to have a board meeting this afternoon with Hudson Daycare Center, but because the snow is so intense, they've canceled that. They moved it to another week, but we'll be there. And also, we're having a conversation with Liz York, who's the director of the Hudson Youth Center, and that takes place, I think, Thursday morning, Wednesday morning.
Yes,
my whole
tomorrow,
calendar
tomorrow.
Is like,
yep, tomorrow.
Crazy. So these three things. The final piece of this puzzle that we talked about making contact with is the school. And so Dr. Spindler, we want to establish a relationship with her in some fashion to start a dialogue about how the school and HTC might work together. Most importantly, though, we're looking to these meetings to get the point of view of these people who are also working in business creation and jobs and childcare, hear what their issues are, hear what their hurdles are, and kind of see if we could help us understand where we might mutually work together to achieve goals that are the same for both of us. So they're eager to meet with us, which is really heartening. And we'll report back in March how these meetings went and what we learned, and we'll take copious notes. So we're excited about that. We've spent time in the last couple of months reaching out to people, meeting businesses, and extending our presence in Hudson to Hudson Business and others in the community who are influencers. We spent a lot of time meeting and greeting people. And every meeting that we've had has been very well received. Our enthusiasm is noted, and people, I think, are willing to share with us ideas that they might have kept to themselves previously. So we're enthusiastic about making an impact on our own or in partnerships with some of them. Hudson has a tremendous amount of assets, but we also have a few liabilities, which, you know, we all know. And there are so many paths that we could take in our work going forward. Tom, you look concerned.
Yeah.
No liabilities. Okay, we don't have any. There's so many things we could do, and it's kind of like going to a buffet. What do you eat? Do you take everything? Do you eat one thing? So we're going to be looking at that. We've been thinking about avenues and ways that we might begin to make an impact on our own and also with partnerships, the executive committee. We'll be presenting some strategic thinking at the March meeting for to help the board understand how we can best help us understand how we can best fulfill our mission to grow business and jobs, and with initiatives that are achievable and can be successful, which are kind of two criteria that we are hoping to meet. I think it'll be a really stimulating meeting. That's just a little tease about what we plan to do. I'm not going to share more than that. But I think it'll be good for the board. I think the board will enjoy collaborating on some big thinking. So with that said, I'm going to ask you to turn it over to Phil for the treasurer's report.
That was great, Chris. Thank you very much. In the spirit of a little bit of an overview, and I won't spend too much of the time, I can tell you what we're thinking in terms of the financial health of the organization going forward, and some of the things that we're hoping to do and looking to do, and then I'll take you through the proposed budget line by line, and we can talk about what can be realized, what can't, and so on. A couple of goals, maybe not all achievable, but our reach has to exceed our grasp, or whatever the statement is, so we have goals for the new year encapsulated in the budget. Some of the things, purely from an admin point of view, though, that support this. We would like, and I believe it's possible, to have the investment funds that we have pretty much cover OPEX going forward. I think that's an achievable goal and a legitimate one. You'll see when we go through the line-by-line budget items, I've put a target in as $120K in an annualized kind of return on our investments. And that approximates, without drilling down into the weeds, a fair estimate of our 12-month burn, covering salary, facilities, et cetera. It doesn't cover exceptional, but it should cover our 12-month burden going forward. We're close enough, and I think it's a possible goal for our investment monies. The logic of that is if we look at when we started putting the funds to work, which was give or take around July 20th of 2022, through the end of December, we generated somewhere in the area of $60,000 in revenue. So the logic, could we achieve $120,000 during the next 12-month tranche, I think is addressable. But in our next meeting, we will have some conversations with our investment advisors, looking to see if we really need to have as much cash as we do and cash equivalents. It's about 60% of our investment pool. We started out super conservatively. We wanted to hold funds aside for potential investment in equities. I doubt that's still the right time, although you can't time the damn thing. Everybody looks for a bottom and a top. It doesn't work so easily. But as you all know, where we are invested, it's all bonds. The yields have exceeded what we were looking at when we started out. There are probably better yields out there now as the interest rate environment has changed, and I want to be sure we adapt to that environment and make the most of what we got, and consider maybe we don't need quite so much in cash, but we'll take a look at it. So that's one. Yes.
So we're looking at the January 23rd, 23 column.
Yeah.
And the run rate is 50% of the budget. Is that because the coupons come due at different times?
Yeah, I'll show you a graph. It's bonds are wonderful things, but in terms of tracking them, they're extraordinarily annoying. As to when coupons come due. So we have some coming due monthly, some coming due quarterly. We've got entities that don't report every month, report every other month, and so on. Forgive me if this is, I don't mean this to be condescending or smartass at all. How comfortable are you all with bonds and how they work, or Is that something that that we can talk about it now or offline? I'll be quick. They're very strange animals. Basically, it's a loan to an entity, and it has some interesting characteristics. There's a face value on the loan that, when the loan period is over, the bond is redeemed. You get that face value back. In the meantime, it pays interest. Sometimes directly as interest, sometimes it's relatable to a discount for when you purchase the bond. so you get a hit up front. The other fun aspect of bonds is you have this issue of realized and unrealized gains and losses, also true with stocks. But our reporting software doesn't do a great job of differentiating between fluctuations in the value of the bond at any given time, and the bond is going to change in value over its life in terms of purchase or dumping the bond simply because it moves with the market. There's an active marketplace for the bonds. It'll depend on what else is available to investors at that point in time. Is the bond attractive or not? And it'll depend on how much life is left in the bond. All of our bonds were purchased with a close of no longer than 3 years. They were bought in three different tranches, 1 year, 2 year, and 3 year, before the bond expires. So there'll be an opportunity again in July to make some difference, but there may be an opportunity now to move some cash into some shapelier instruments, and we'll take a look at it and report back to you.
That was good, thank you.
So let's go down through the 2023 budget. It's probably the most important piece of...
So the title of this is Statement of Activity 2022 with 2023 Budget, right?
And a couple questions about that that came up. Many thanks to Martha, who I thanked previously, but I'll embarrass her for just responding really quickly with some questions on the financials. It was super helpful, and I would love it if you all would do the same going forward when this comes out in email. If you do have questions, to go for it. The budget is not an actual. It attempts to relate to the prior year, but it also wants to embrace ambitions or goals going forward. Nevertheless, every single one of those numbers is an estimate. And the reason that's worth doing is as we report in each month, as you can see, January is not all that helpful, but over the course of 12 months, the numbers become more and more helpful. So you will know by mid-year, really, we'll be in a position to say, how are we doing against our goals? Does it make sense? Are we doing something that's not quite right yet? Overspending, underspending, or whatever the issue is. So I'm sorry that January isn't populated, but that will come. And we'll continue to run out that line against the 203 budget. I'll try to highlight a couple things. The biggest change is comp. And obviously the other biggest change is earnings, because we didn't have a basis for earnings before. As I said, I'm hoping to keep those aligned, and if we watch ourselves, I believe we can do it. We can certainly try to. It would be sweet to be able to say that all of our OPEX is covered and all of the other funds are free for other kinds of direct activity. There was a question about donations, grant income specifically, that was raised. If you look at the footnote down on the bottom, we had targeted 50K. That was totally a plug number, an estimate. But we've already realized, or will within the next week or two, 34K grant committed from Ecological Restoration Partners in Climate Action, or as commonly known, we call it here, trees. So I think we'll make that. Now, it doesn't actually matter. I wanted to have a target going forward. We can adjust it as we have more information about what's available. I think that payroll expense is what it is. We've not had really a full-time executive director out in the world. There will be some other expenses coming in if you note in facilities and equipment or whatever we're calling it, we're gonna fix and or whatever, replace the air conditioning. Web design is underway right now, and Misty, correct me if this is not correct, we're doing the underlying infrastructure for the website, the navigation and framework, pictures and content to come. Some of that, I think, will be able to take advantage of our close association with the rather famous New York creative director, who's sitting between Paul and Martha.
And the website will be up, and the new site will be up and running for, that's part of the March audit that has to be totally ticked and tied and beautiful. So there's a lot happening behind the scenes that you're not seeing. So if you went into HDC today, you would see the old site and Brenda still listed and all that. There is a new site that actually has correct content. So we're gonna, Tim and I are gonna try and take that live by the end of this week, early next, just so it's out there and when people look us up. But it has to be perfected specifically for that site, which is in full swing right now.
Okay. So in the good old days, if you remember, it was my custom to be called upon by the chairperson, and when the numbers came up, and I would say, now over to Brenda. Mm-hmm. So we had, or at least I had, I'll speak for myself, was an addiction to being able to come here without spending days on this. And I'm being weaned from that addiction, and I think it's a good thing. I think what's going to happen is these reports are going to get better and better, and hopefully more interactive with you all. As I said, it is not a problem to write and mail in questions, concerns on any of this going forward. It's incredibly helpful, and just makes a better product. I don't know that we need to go through the. Nothing much has changed right now. When we're going to see changes going forward in terms of financial commitments will be after the next meeting, after the annual meeting, when we walk together through a strategic review of where we think we're going to focus energy, talent, and money on specific initiatives, and then this will change again, because we're going to have to estimate that. It's my hope that we all love being a standalone entity that's self-sustaining, that's not necessarily easy to do. But one way to do that is to be conscious, obviously, of our expenses and our investment funds. Another way to do that, and not everybody here was around long enough to remember, but it is a standard practice, is where there are grant or other initiatives with external funding, which I hope is where we go for the big bucks, we're entitled to a management fee on that, so there are sources of income embedded in staying the course, choosing the right programs, but also choosing the right partners who are able to deliver serious bucks.
Just on that note, Phil, there's a $2,500, to his point, there's a $2,500 administrative fee in the tree grant.
Okay, so the balance of the $34,000 then has to be spent. And I'm wondering if that should be a line item under expenditures, because we're not going to show a profit if
right.
$50,000 comes in, but
$34,000
goes out. Right, I understand. Yeah.
Only $2,500 stays here.
Exactly. No. Yes.
Okay. It has to be reflected somehow. Yeah.
Right.
We'll do.
Phil, is that it? Are you good?
I think for now that you would ask me. I mean, we can go through it in more detail.
Well, yeah, anyone can reach out to Phil.
I'm here. Please do mail.
He's
it's not necessary to focus just on a, in a rush or in a, in this situation, and it's more than welcome, and I will get back to you.
So do I have a motion to accept the Hudson Development Corp Statement of Activity 2022-23 budget?
I'll make that motion.
Paul first, second. John second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Any objections? Opposed? Okay, we passed the budget. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you guys very
much.
Thank you for your input.
Thanks for your thanks for weaning yourself.
Huh?
Weaning yourself.
You know what? I'm not naturally lazy, but maybe I'm kidding. This is a better way going forward to have all of us deeply into it. It's too easy to depend on one person, and we're gonna do it.
Well, that is a good segue.
Yeah.
Phil. So hi everyone. Misty here. So we have been talking a lot about board's roles, staff roles, division of labor, all of these things, and we are actively searching for an administrator. So if anyone would like to throw anyone's hat in the ring, we are looking for a part-time admin support, somebody to assist with, somebody to assist with some of these things that really are not meant to be carried out by board members. And so, you know, I am right now servicing as much as I can in the role of ED and admin. I alluded to before, we are in full swing with the audit. So between myself, Susan, our bookkeeper, and Phil, we are managing all of that with UHY. And so far, so good. We are on track. UHY will be here next month at the annual meeting to present the year-end wrap-up. And so I feel confident that that will put us back on track from a compliance perspective.
Remember, it wasn't so long ago where we were 8 months or more late on the audit. And last year we were on time, and I believe this year we'll be on time, and that's pretty cool.
You know, all of the things that need to be completed. From you all, it's just the board evaluations. So that link I will send out this week. Ideally, I'd like to get those back with it by March 10th, Friday, March 10th, so that we can just check that off of our list with UHY.
Misty, any news on the lease? Is that still an issue or not an issue?
I have seen some back and forth between Crystal and the city regarding our lease. The lease document has been agreed upon. It just hasn't been, I guess, completely signed.
When's it up?
It's been up.
Oh, we're holding over?
It was supposed to be re-signed, I think, the end of last year.
Yeah.
November. So, Crystal's working on it. We were concerned about being thrown out of here, so that is apparently not a concern.
Takes court order.
Mm-hmm. So we will be staying on the second floor here, which is great.
We're there.
A great office. Yeah.
We could use some friends up there. But it's all right.
There's been huge turnover here, right?
Yeah. So at the chamber, if you all haven't heard, Amy, who was a 19-year veteran here at the chamber, has left. And then Debbie, who was here for about 19 months, head of
membership.
She also left and has turned over that role to the new head of membership. Her name is Carrie. So she's been here now for about 3 weeks. I don't know her from before.
Her parents
are
real estate agents. Yeah, she is true.
So she's picking up this where that team left off. She's doing a little bit of both of those roles. There is a luncheon being held next, not this coming Wednesday, next Wednesday, the 8th, at the Falls, in recognition. In Paul's apartment, no, in recognition of Women's History Month.
I hope it's good.
Yeah. So that is their next event that they will be hosting.
They're going through some turmoil, though, I have to say. And so, you know, I think there will be a lot of changes in the office space down there. I think they're going to try to, like, modernize it a bit and figure out how to be more, have more of an impact in the community. That's what I heard from her, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. It's good.
Great. And, you know, they represent the county, so, you know, they have a very big footprint that they have to cover. Which and is different than HTC. I like us working in tandem together. Meetings and connections that we've made. So Katie Newcomb, who is the Chief Economic Officer of Center for Economic Growth out of the Capital Region, came at the end of January, and she, it was a great day. So she started her morning at CEDC with Martha, Mike, and Jessica, and then that same crew came down to HDC's office. We talked about, you know, what's happening in the Capital Region, and then most specifically, you know, we really tailored our conversation with Hudson specifically. We took Katie to see the Kaz Warehouse and meet Ben Fain. We went and toured Pocketbook Factory, met with Sean Rowland, and then she saw the inside of the bank on Warren Street that's being converted to a chocolate shop, and got to meet Arden briefly, the owner-operator of that space. So that day alone, we showed Katie, almost $50 million worth of development in her city. She was super enthusiastic. It was a great exchange with her. She has a lot of institutional knowledge with surrounding economic growth, and especially in the Capital Region. She was at National Grid for the better part of a decade, and immediately went back to her desk that night and connected both Ben and Sean with the woman whose name is escaping me right now, who's currently at National Grid, talking about all kinds of grant opportunities that National Grid still has at the ready today that are actually sometimes you just have to ask for, a lot less competitive than some of the state grants that come through. So I was on all of those exchanges with both Ben and Sean, and it was just great to have her here. We took her to the Maker for lunch. Mike was there, Jessica joined us, and it was nice to kind of put Hudson back in her mind as she's thinking about, you know, as things cross her desk, it's easy to think of Troy or Albany or Schenectady and Saratoga, and now I feel like she'll think of Hudson too. Mm-hmm. So that was a great, great exchange. As Chris said, we had our second business roundtable. We had many of the same attendees. Zach from the Maker, William Farmer was in representation, Nine Cakes, Hudson Roastery, Hudson Clothier was there. They were not able to attend the first one. So we had both Mary Vaughn and her key Hudson associate, Ivy, in attendance. So much good conversation comes out of it. Everyone wants to attend. In fact, after our first roundtable, Paul Colarusso was like, hey, how do I get my wife in on that roundtable? And so I was emailing back and forth with Paula about her business. And so our intention is to keep these roundtables going, continue to expand them, bring in new cross-sections of the community. You know, the general consensus is that HBCI has been quiet over the last few months, so these businesses are really seeing this as an opportunity to bring questions, comments, concerns to the forefront to a team of people who can actually, if we can't solve it for them, at least connect them with somebody who can. So we have a meeting with Kate and Mona from Talbot and Arlene this week to talk about some big ideas that they have, you know, whether it's their own personal goals of expanding and finding commercial storage space that they need just to grow their business, to more of a community collaboration and sets of ideas that they have. I was in there over the weekend and Kate was behind the cheese counter and just came over and chatted with me and said, you know, look, we need help. We need to put, I should say, she wants to do more with training staff and training staff to work in this community. And she said, I would be willing to host it here. I would be willing to be on any kind of like subcommittee to create the training. But she's like, we need it because her staff is young. They don't have the same kind of depth of personal engagement that the customers demand when they come through the city. And we started batting around some ideas just right there, you know, in front of the cheeses. And I said, I had had a great experience at Wonder Bar recently that week, and the staff there was just seemed happy to be at work. And there's this real kind of ebb and flow of pride in work, skilling up at work and being able to do the job and do the job with enthusiasm. And there's a real mixed bag out there. And every shop owner mentions this and talks about it. So I feel like that's something we could definitely make an impact on.
After our tour with those people, excuse me, we did speak to Sean Rowland and Ben and Arden about their staffing needs in the next year. And it's about 75 people that they're
just between the three.
Between the three, so they all kind of look like deer in the headlights when they talk about. They're a little hesitant to say that they need that, but
they're hesitant, or they're just completely
they're
unaware,
kind of terrified,
or unaware of the how it is.
I think they're getting aware, but I think that they are concerned about how they're going to do it.
So
it's certainly, you know, and people point out, Kristen, how you have empowered your staff to be really good, and what does she do? What water are you drinking?
It's to me, it's the hardest part of all of them. It's harder than building it, and I think the two of you at least know that we're losing two of our senior members, which is so scary. I mean, so many of our team members have been with us for 5, 6, 7 years, and then they go on and they have lives that take them elsewhere. You know, I talk about it a lot because an important thing that kind of has happened with us is through this time, people have, they've had consistent employment. You know, we make everybody pull their tips and it goes in their paycheck, and so they have real, when they go to apply for a mortgage, you know, they actually have real income and all of these things, and the number of people that have bought houses that have, you know, had jobs with us, et cetera. And the whole idea is to get them to do what they're doing. And then you're like, no, don't go. So we have two. Our head bartender is leaving to open his own place with his wife. And then Rachel, who is our head server for many years, is moving to the city due to family issues. But it's scary.
Wow.
So we're just trying to bring people up, but it's,
So we talked about at our roundtable about possibly serving, HGC serving as a shared resource or sort of like shared services, you know, whether it's pooling headhunter, like instead of having each business hire their own headhunter, which is really cost prohibitive, is there a way that we can sort of become the centralized hub of talent pool, training, and cross-pollination from shops and restaurants and whatnot.
And I think Chris Nardone, too, at Columbia Green will be
an
instrumental part of that.
I think he has money for the training.
What?
I think he has money for
I think he does, too.
Yeah.
Well, just like the collective buying.
Yeah.
Like anything that we can, even collective buying when it comes to social media and promotion and,
exactly.
You know, if we're all, we all, you know, even security, like there's more that we can talk about us being in business together, and you know, we're all these individual mom and pops, but collectively we're in business.
So you're talking about a bid?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, you know, economies of scale. It's like the social media piece, you know. Each person, each business doing that on their own is an exceptional amount of money. But to have one person, and we actually have a person who just moved here. He's young, he's super talented, and he wants to work in this community. If he were doing it for everybody on a schedule, that, you know, all of a sudden everyone's costs for social media much more attainable. And he would have a job and he would stay here. And
well, it's also the duplication of effort. Like, you know, if we have everybody kind of getting to first base for every company, when you have somebody that can literally
exactly. So those are the things from a workforce that are on our mind, and how we can continue to play an active role there. Anything I left out?
Nope.
Can I add one?
Yeah.
Transportation, the degree to which we can get people to where the jobs are, and vice versa. Paul and I were talking to somebody, out in Greene County. They have a pharmaceutical company or whatever. They're looking for a couple hundred people that they can't find, literally. So if we define the job environment as our 2 square miles, we're kidding ourselves, because we're going to be competing with the other cities in the Hudson Valley, all of whom are on the upswing and have been, whatever it is, the Great Migration or the untethering of office workers from their office, or just the fact it's so damn beautiful, or whatever. We need to think bigger. How can we not just engage our workforce here, make sure there are great opportunities for entrepreneurs, but how can we engage them against a larger environment of the Hudson Valley? How can we get them to work and back if there are opportunities out there?
One of the things on the meeting too that I just wanted to mention, Nine Cakes brought a little gift box of 3 cookies for everyone, which was a really sweet gesture, but also it was the week before Valentine's Day, and that paid back incredibly. I went and got all of my Valentines from there, knowing that I, you know, but I mean, just little things like that, and I showed up, and I was like, I'm here for, you know,
massive Valentine's.
Small business cookies, you know, so little things like that just make a huge difference.
It really does. And I mean, we talked about that in the meeting, how the owner operators and this, you know, creative economy that Hudson, it really is Hudson magic, and how do we continue to support that in these microdoses so that, you know, we continue to exude that magic, whether it be during peak season, which is right around the corner. I mean, Hudson's always active. I mean, that's the beauty of it. We know that it's going to get busy as the weather turns. And so, you know, what can we do to support businesses during that time as well? I was in Culture Cream last night. Yes, the snow was coming, but I was in a Culture Cream. And, you know, that's really how I learn the most, right? I go in, I talk to the person, I hear about this, that, and the other thing. And I said, you know, this summer, are you planning to do the sand in the street again? And she's like, yeah, I mean, I really liked that, but she's like, you know, it kind of depends, right? Because she's like, my business is so fast in any way that it's like, sometimes I can't even keep up with the line out the door, and she's looking to not change her model, but expand and go wholesale too. So it's like every business is evolving. And then Alex, who was heading up Back Bar, is now at Merchant Social. Mm-hmm. And Zach has unfortunately left the Maker, but they have a new GM and they also have a new chef. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, there's a lot of things shaken up mm-hmm. in town.
So that means Merchant Social's reopening?
Yes. After, supposedly, they finished up their catering with the Jazz Fest this past week.
Yeah, they did all the catering at the Jazz Fest last weekend and this weekend.
Yeah.
businesses are always changing, so
yeah.
Every single one. But I just think that we should really host an event, or at least try. If we're doing business roundtables, we need to include everyone. You know, I just think that cherry picking businesses is risky. So maybe we'll just invite anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have a good point. I agree with you. I mean, we did set it up kind of like a beta test. We weren't really sure people would even talk if they got there or they would come. So I think two proves the case.
Yes.
And I do think everybody who wants to come should be able to come.
Well,
you
just,
be
you've
thinking.
Only been focusing on retail and service.
Right,
right.
What about the second floor businesses? Those
yeah.
are the ones
yeah.
we've got to get
yeah.
in. And it's harder to
yeah.
reach them.
Yeah.
And people with basement offices, they're
mm-hmm.
loving to come out and talk. Because they never get out.
Yeah.
Up from below.
And actually, the chamber is talking about potentially having a new membership level for people who have home offices.
That's
maybe
good.
Don't have to pay the $300.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be good.
And we should meet those people when they host
mm-hmm.
an event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
But, you know, we should look into what. I have no experience with bids. They're membership organizations, though, right? So,
yeah.
You know, we should maybe ask Crystal to give us a walkthrough of what,
mm-hmm.
what it takes to set one up, what it means, what the ongoing obligations might be, which would just give us the kind of the bare bones of it, but from there we can maybe understand how we'd
be
involved.
I agree with that. We'll do that.
So, Marla, will you expand just a little bit on this, on your vision for the event and what we should be goaling ourselves or tasking ourselves to kind of create?
Because
I agree with you. I think that those engagements are the absolute best, right? When people are just free and they're talking and they're out of their elements and, yeah.
So I don't know whether you want
yeah.
to have a panel. You know, sometimes
yeah.
it's nice to have a structure of some kind, but it's... Essentially, it's a networking event, and that's where the real relationships are developed. But so I don't have an answer,
yeah,
and
yeah.
we might only get a dozen people, but what if we get 100 people? We
right.
need to think about the venue, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And
does it have to be an HTC thing, or can it be like something, because the chamber does do these things, and are there other, you know, and then there's the HBCI, which is quiet, but is it something that we could maybe do with them? Because it's the same people that join the chamber aren't necessarily the same people that would come to this.
Right, but they've got that, they can't, it's hard
oh,
for them
the
to
county,
just do Hudson.
Yeah.
But if we partner with the Hudson Business Coalition, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever organization
yeah.
might
yeah.
get people out.
Yeah.
And then, yes, we'll have to come up with a format and a plan, but I think we just want to make sure we're getting a really good cross-section.
Yeah.
But if we're going to be discussing, you know, jobs and opportunity and so forth, so much of opportunity has to be considered as transferable, that anybody that is, you know, which, again, cherry-picking, you know, you'd like to throw a bigger net and get other people in, but it's hard to, I don't know if monetize is the right word, entrepreneurship. I mean, so much of what we do here is one or two person individual, it's their image, and then they need to hire people. Now, are they training people with a marketable skill to go to another area to work? It's so much of when you prompt, you know, when we would hire people, and we hired lots of them over the years, that what you were learning in the X number of years you worked with us, you could take and go someplace else, and if you like what you're doing, you'll get a job in this industry. And that's something that I think has to maybe be, it encourages people to do, or actually to perhaps even take jobs that they wouldn't normally take.
And I think if we can reach, you know, the second floor type of
right.
offices, you know, not everyone has any concerns about hiring because they're never going to hire somebody. You know, they're just single, sole owner entrepreneurs,
yeah.
and they have other concerns. They still need to make money and find customers. But so I just think we should try and branch out and really get a better cross-section and yeah, learn from them.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we talk about committees?
Yes. So within our own four walls here, the committee meetings, would be great to resume in the month of March, so that we're back on track as we kick off our new year following the annual meeting. If your committee is missing a person, now that we've had a few people step off the board, we should look at adding to that committee.
Just the bylaws state that we have two committees. One is the Governance Finance Committee, of which Phil, the treasurer, is the chair, and there will be two other people on that committee coming soon to be in compliance. And then the second committee is the Governance Committee, which we're all part of the Governance Committee. So the Governance Committee needs to meet. The other committees that we formed were the Business Development Committee. We changed the name from, I forget what, to Business Development. So that is a committee that would deal with a lot of the issues that we've just been talking about, and anyone who wants to join that committee should do so. And then we had a Transportation Committee, which we may or may not want to reinstitute. And we talked about maybe having a Hudson Safety Committee. So
and nominating.
Uh-huh.
Nominating. Definitely.
Yeah, and of course the nominating committee.
And what was the first one you said? Finance?
The finance and
governance.
No, governance is
there's
finance
separate,
and audit.
Audit and finance.
Yeah,
okay.
That's one committee.
So I had just when we were transitioning in, I had tried to get away with just having the executive committee function as the finance committee. They're all members and so on. And I'm thinking that this would be a good time to reach out to some other people.
Yeah, I think we need to have other members.
So audit and finance, business development.
Governance,
transportation.
All on transportation.
Safety, you suggested? Safety.
And nominating.
And it was a real estate.
And real estate.
Oof.
I think
that's
a lot of
committees.
Yeah, that's a lot of
committees.
But committees can come and go as they're needed and
celebrated.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Okay. Well, the ABO tells us we have to have some.
Governance and financial audit are the main.
The audit and finance, yeah.
What was I thinking?
How was I nominating?
We
should always have one, but yeah, that wasn't a mandatory.
What nominating?
Well, sometimes governance and nominating are
one. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We could think about doing that. I mean, we do have a lot of committees.
Yeah. Okay. And we would have to do that by affixing the nominating committee onto the governance committee, right? Because the governance is a given, ABO wise.
And that's the entire board?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's a little cumbersome. Just saying.
Sure. Okay.
Right.
Do we want
to? It is the whole board or can be the whole board?
I think the whole board.
Yes.
Since I've been around, they've always said, don't worry, you're all on the governance committee.
Yes.
But is that in the bylaws?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
We might have to. I think we could add the nominating committee onto the governance committee if we wanted to. Make a motion to do that and then put it in the bylaws.
Right, but I think Martha's point was that if the governance committee
big.
Is the whole board, then the nominating committee is kind of obviated.
Yes.
And,
that's a lot of people to get together. You need a little meeting.
I think this needs a further thing.
Okay, sounds good. So
how are we going about finding the other admin person?
We have two candidates in the hopper that we're going to reach out to. I've reached out to one, and the other one is somebody that I met in the post office who's an admin / grant writer. And any other people that you might know of?
What are we paying?
We haven't established that yet. We don't know how many hours we really need them. A couple days a week. What's the going rate for that in your world? An admin.
$50 an hour, which is insane. You're lucky if they can offer it.
Well, I think the people we're looking at come with, they're going to have a skill set, but I don't think we're going to.
Or you just give them a card with the alphabet on it.
Yeah.
We should have a job description, and then we'll know, I think.
Yeah.
And that grant writer piece is key to be able to keep that one piece going.
Well, who did we use under Sheena? The grant writers, right?
The Dukes.
The Dukes, yeah. I think the Dukes were unhappy with HDC, and I think HDC was unhappy with the Dukes, so I don't think that's a marriage we could glue back together.
But yeah, there are a lot of freelancers.
And there's a lot of freelancers, yeah.
What?
The reinvestment, community, whatever, that big $10 million check, because they weren't involved in that.
No, they
weren't. Yeah, they got kind of elbowed aside by Sheena.
Yeah.
Yeah, the DRI group.
Yeah. A lot has changed since then, too. I mean, there's a lot of people now who were working corporately who have written for corporate, you know, funding, and they're not writing for corporate funding anymore.
And we thought we were.
I mean, I think the landscape, well, it's not people, there's not people running up and down the streets looking for work. You know, there are people in various, like Nick unearthed one who we think is good. And so any of you, if you think about people you know in your real life who might be right for this, it would be good. Or Martha, if anybody comes through your world over there.
Then if you decide we don't need them here, send them my way.
Please. So that's the committee story.
That's
back
it.
To you.
Yeah, no, that's it. Friendly reminder, if you've not taken your ABO board training, because that's also due for the audit. Everyone has to be up to date, and I have to show them the, you know, the...
It's once every 2 years, right? Every 3 years?
Three.
By the way, it's simple.
So I think it would just be helpful if everybody did it in March so that we can just put everybody as complete and not have... And then
it's not that terrible either. I mean,
oh, no, it's super fast. There are two coming up.
On the real estate project. I'm a lawyer. We get to be everything. Why do I have to take this? But I did it last year, and it was...
Okay.
It makes you want to chew your tongue out of your mouth.
Does it?
Yeah.
It's almost terrible.
Oh, my God.
I can't wait to
John.
Okay, so that's my report.
Great.
So, okay, so we have had some conversations over the course of the business roundtables and over the course of just general meeting with people that we run into about safety. Of course, we talked about that, and Nick has been talking to Chief Moore about an initiative that he has. He's gotten a grant for cameras, which he is to be placed in various places around the city. And we've been talking with him about that, how that's going to be implemented, where they're going to go, how they will be managed, etc. The Business Roundtable people have found it, have been very enthusiastic about possibly being involved in that effort. They talked about maybe there we could consider doing a co-funding thing where we would maybe empower a few more cameras, see when the ones that are up are enforced, whether the police feel like they need other areas that they weren't able to cover. Maybe the businesses and HDC could participate in funding an additional some number of cameras. They're not particularly expensive. And Nick, I'll let Nick talk about them a little bit.
Well, what I know is that they received their first they received six yesterday, and they've changed. There are 360 degree fisheye, which shows obviously 360 degrees. You're getting a much bigger area, and the chief wants to. My conversation with him, and I think within the executive committee, is that we can't. If public safety is for everyone, it's not just
right.
for Warren Street, but Warren Street will be the first test case. That I believe they'll put one up at 7th Street Park, and then one down closer to the Maker on Warren to see how they work. They're going to start them gradually, see what the cost is to install them. What he needs is 120 volts and Wi-Fi in the building. And that's essentially it. Everything is wireless from here on in.
So they kind of have to be away from the building, though, huh? Like on an arm or something?
Well, they might be on an arm, or they'll be mounted up underneath an overhang or on an eave that juts out. But they're going to talk to, what is it, Fred from SNF Communications and see what the cost is, but it appears to be fairly modest.
So SNF would be installing them?
More than likely.
Okay.
More
not,
than
not
likely.
Not Rob Perry?
No, no. SNF would be installing them. And if it's just a few hundred bucks to do it, it's within their budget
okay.
to cover it. So I think that SNF is going to act favorably in order to help the city. But again, getting back to what I consider to be, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, I also think that neighborhoods that feel the impact of, you know, that feel perhaps to the residents feel unsafe, that they should be afforded these same cameras as well, and with their compliance too. You know, that there has to be a reach out within the community to say, would you, what do you think of this? You know?
Yeah, I think borrowing all that's going to
well, and, but
and
again, what do we have to do?
I want them, I don't want them.
Yeah,
you're invading my privacy. Like, give me a
I know, I know, but we know what happened when they tried to change Robinson Street to a to a historic district without showing any courtesy and asking anyone.
Sure.
I mean, it blew up and, you know, wasn't a good thing.
I agree with
you.
You
said there, you said six cameras?
There are six right now, and they're...
And is there an optimal number that, I mean...
This is yet it's to be determined. I think the chief mentioned something to the effect of as many as 10. But right now, I believe that they've got six coming. And I saw one yesterday. The first.
Yeah, they're not being monitored so much as they're just, like, recording into some space.
Right.
So that if something needs to be looked at after the fact, it can be looked at.
I believe
at,
so.
Right?
Yeah.
And we believe they are a deterrent.
Pardon?
They're a deterrent. I mean, that's the plan. That's
but again, too, is that I think we have to be sensitive, too, to where they're located. I mean, we just can't.
You disagree?
No, it was just raised at a meeting that there's little evidence that they actually deter crime, but they do solve crime, you know, when you can find out.
How much are they, a camera?
A couple hundred bucks. They've dropped in price dramatically.
Mm-hmm. So how many cameras in the, like, average English village of 6,500 people?
Yeah,
25. I don't know. 25? Good to know.
One on every
corner. Because it's not, like, the most...
Yes, it's most
surveilled
yes,
Western
England.
Society.
Yeah.
But I mean, it does beat assigning a cop to an attic, which is the way they used to do it.
Yeah, they did that at our office upstairs. Yeah.
They did it at one of our buildings. They sat up in the attic,
smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee,
but watched out the window all night
Palumbo.
Long. Yeah.
So there's that aspect of safety in Hudson, and then the other piece that is come up with the business roundtables is the, well, we were very innovative during the pandemic to come up with concrete blocks to give stores the ability, or, you know, basically restaurants, the ability to serve more people outside and inside so they could space the tables inside and be more, you know, have the same number, but outside, inside. While that went the course 2 years, it really is now 3 years. Thank you. 3 years. It's this year. It's generally speaking, people are not wanting that to return. Also, on top of that, they're not safe to the category of outdoor barriers anymore. There's something called a Jersey lock, Jersey.
So it's called a Jersey barrier.
Jersey
That's
barrier.
What's considered to be. The standard, the blocks as we know right now will roll as much as 20 feet when they're hit by a car.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Not only the car, but
the
car will look terrible too. I've
right, but
that.
If you hit one of those, I mean, Jersey barriers tend to be interlocked. They have these, what they call deflection pinch points. It also doesn't, it appears from what I've been hearing that we've dodged a bullet. The city, there's been very, you know, there have been, thank God, no serious issues other than the bent fender.
Yeah.
But if one of these things were to come loose and squash somebody or break their leg, we're on the hook for it. They're not an approved barrier for traffic. They also, from what I was told, there has to be appropriate signage and signaling. And we don't have that with these barriers. They also don't afford what are called cold patch ramps for handicap, they're
up and down
mm-hmm. curb around them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we had a wonderful opportunity for them. I don't know if by me personally, retail businesses don't need them. I mean, in the traditional sense, clothing store doesn't need them.
But no. I think one thing we were thinking of doing, we don't have an email database of all the businesses.
Right, so we need to...
Although our goal would be to eventually develop that so we could communicate with the businesses in Hudson using email. Business Coalition does have...
I was just going to say, Hudson Business Coalition handled the last round.
Yeah.
So they'll have a complete inventory.
I would say, too, being at somebody that sat on the tourism board when all of that went through... I think the initial idea was, of course, to get through COVID and get people
outside
to be able, outside and to be able to keep their business through COVID. But it was also a little bit of a beta test to see it's walkable streets or shared, what is it called?
Shared streets.
But but the other thing in addition to shared streets, the guy that
Peter Spear.
Yeah, and what is his
complete
streets? To kind of take little steps to see what worked, what didn't work well, and maybe there is something there that HTC could do to say this is what worked, this didn't work, and if we are to try to have more of an indoor-outdoor environment, let's use what the last few years and say these are the things that really were not good and these are the things that were good, because we really did give it a good effort and I think we have some good data there.
But if we're going to do it...
Who has that data?
We have to do it the right way.
Nobody.
You have to, in your round tables, it'll all be anecdotal.
Yeah,
it's anecdotal.
Right.
Well, yeah, let's go back to Culture Queen, right, for example. So she had the cinder blocks, but she, mm-hmm. Threw sand on the street, and people were sitting, low to the ground in beach chairs. That's probably not safe.
Not at all.
I mean, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun, but what I'm saying is that if we're going to do it, then there are villages. Rhinebeck has done it successfully. I think they're hideous to look at. If anybody knows what a Jersey barrier looks like, they're hideous. But they work, and they're safe.
But I'm saying that's something that's a more permanent option that is not nowhere near maybe to the scale.
I make to sound so mercenary here, but I think of the lost revenue. We make money off of parking tickets too,
tickets. It's all these points. Yeah.
You can still have parking tickets just on other streets. In cities that do stuff like that, I'm thinking of Boulder, Colorado,
Park City,
San Francisco. Right. There's so much organized parking around these areas that make them attractive, both for businesses and customers, and that's the key.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the alleys. The alleys on both sides of Water Street are so strategic, but they're not really being used for what they were designed for, which is deliveries and receipt and sending stuff out. And if we made a concerted effort to actually return to that design, we might have, there might be a benefit for the retail businesses, and enable Warren Street or portions of it on weekends or whenever to be shuttered to traffic, to anything but foot traffic and bicycles.
Was there a time? Thanks, Martha.
Bye-bye.
Was there a time when Below Third was closed on Saturday?
The Below Third Fair, where everybody would, they put the tent up. Heck, that was.
And there was Anthony Marchione had a lot of interest in reviving that. He might be somebody for you all to talk to, because he's got a lot of energy. And his bar is pretty profitable, I think. So he's got resources, and he wants to do something.
It's 520.
He was a avid supporter of the blocks as well.
When you're getting extra tops for basically nothing,
exactly.
What the hell? I mean, I'm not disputing your desire to do it, but you're also a business.
I am, because I bought a building that a block that went like this. We couldn't put tables out there. I'm just kidding.
But what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm totally kidding. That's why we
need to break up the parking spaces and terrace them.
Right, right. And that's why they allowed us to come around and do our parking lot that eventually, but yeah, I mean, so that was our silver lining, but yeah.
So what I'm taking away from this is the Hudson Business Coalition would be a good partner for us to talk to about anecdotally what happened, what was good, what was bad, and also have the list of everyone who is on Warren Street. And maybe have...
You know, last year they didn't... It was just restaurants. It was no longer retail.
I know.
No longer and retail business.
Yeah. I just want to say, too, I don't necessarily think this is something that HDC should take on as a cause. Really more the gathering of the information.
I would have been, you know... Let's put it this way. I used to drive us crazy with our business that there were so many parades, and the parades were held on Saturdays, and they were held at the prime work hours, and the street would be cut off, and you'd have 7 parades a summer, which in construction is your busiest time, and none of your customers could get in, and you'd kind of go, but we're supporting the parade too, you know? I mean, it is complicated, and you want to be a good member and supportive member of the community. You want all this.
Well, we've trimmed down the number of parades.
Yeah, we have.
Yes, we have. And they're at more civilized hours now, too.
Yeah, and the city does do,
yes, they do
a good job of opening and closing the street.
And Nick, I think you just hit on another huge point that we talk about internally in our business all the time. It's what's best for our business, but what's best for the community, because what's best for the community is also best for our business in the longer term. So, and it's, you're always weighing all of those things.
Always.
Yeah.
So, Bill, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I did. I think we need to be very cautious about using our small resources for ad hoc solutions, because it buries our superpower.
Yes, it does.
Our superpower is the capacity to gain public and private grants and put them to work for structural solutions, systemic solutions, and big solutions. If we spend our time on ad hoc, we should do it to support other entities, but that can't be I don't think it should be our focus. I think we should be wary about engaging too much of our resource or Misty's time or whomever's time on the ad hoc. Mm-hmm. Like a structural thing would be what John and other folks were raising, which is what would it take to get the alleys back to contribute to entry and egress of goods, so the street's not blocked all the time. Because we're marketing a product which is currently in vogue with the travel press and everybody else, and I'm old enough to know that none of that's forever. There's a lot of competition out there. If we stop becoming charming, adorable, cute, friendly, and walkable, people are going to move on. Other cities are competing.
And how does that relate to the point about the barriers and our resources?
They're ugly.
The last part.
They're ugly. People come here for a historic fantasy.
I know.
Of some alternative reality to relax and unwind.
The reality in Hudson, too. I totally support what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's so little regulation here. Working with the people at 601 Union, and they're like, what do we need to do this? What do we need to do that? What do we need to do that? I'm like, nothing. There's just the city doesn't regulate any of those things. New York State doesn't hardly regulate a lot of things the way other states do. And if restaurants want to serve on the street, there's nothing stopping them. There's nothing in the city code that stops them. As long as they leave 24 inches of open space, then people can walk through. That's the reality. If there's a market demand for that sort of thing, there's plenty of places where you can do it. Not, I mean, plenty within, you know, the context of a city the size of a postage stamp, but there are opportunities. so the market will take care of itself. It always does. Mm-hmm. The market's good at that.
Very good.
And I agree with you. We should look at more systemic things. And I said this last month, too. You know, we need to pick one or two things that these are our goal. We're going to make a meaningful impact on this because there's only so many of us, and we only have so much money right now.
Well, to your point, both your points regarding the alleys, there was a time when you could park in the alleys. Then you couldn't park in the alleys. And I think you can park back in the alleys now. Because, well, it seems that you, even though I've been here long enough to know I could leave a vehicle for 6 months parked in the alley, and nobody cared because we didn't use the alleys because there was nobody here. Then try to leave one overnight and you get a ticket. Now we're back again where, because of the lack of, a lot of the lack of parking, we have merchants parking in the alleys now, which occludes the alleys. You can't get through with deliveries as easily. So to both your points, there is no regulation. And we need maybe to address something as simple as that. Could be simply fixed. I don't know.
You might, requires work with the council.
You
the
might want to
with the police, the fun guys who walk around.
The complication is all these things are legit and important.
Yeah,
and it makes the choices very, very difficult. It's not like they don't matter; they matter enormously. If you look at what defines in most surveys quality of life in a small community. Among them are safety, the ability to move around freely in the community, a degree of physical charm, parking. I mean, but these they all matter. We gotta pick our fight.
Go ahead, please.
You know, we had a parking study done, and the results will be. I hope tonight, if he can get here.
Cool.
Right.
But it's a very valuable study, and it's highly informative.
Is it good?
Yeah, and I think it'll have recommendations for regulation.
Right.
Maybe a couple new couple changes.
Right.
I hope personally, I'd like to see a kiosk system instead of these meters and things like that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that's good.
Tom, can I just ask you real quick? I've mentioned this in the small business thing a few times. That guy that came and presented to the tourism board that we tried to push through, the one from Tennessee, I forget his name.
Yeah, I remember.
But I think that there would be a lot of value to him just presenting, not just to, because just the way of thought about how to develop, not necessarily hiring him, et cetera, but when he came and to the HTC.
Okay, HTC, yeah.
And I said that I would buy, I'll put him up. Yeah, I think he'd even come for free. Mm. Don't you think there was, I think, to me it was very valuable. It
depends on if that's the prevailing view, you know.
But did you think it was valuable? No? Okay. I just know that you supported us.
No, I supported you because I thought it was important to support what you'd done, you know, but I didn't really like it.
Yeah. And that was really, and that's
the guy that you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think that's equally as important.
Okay.
To understand the people that didn't understand it and to understand the people that come from corporate worlds that were really like, we should do this.
Because I'm actually confused because it's like, okay, so we don't like the blocks, but we don't want to spend time on the blocks. Is that what we're saying? Like, I agree with you. I think the blocks are a barrier for a lot of things, and they're very super unattractive. But going to John's point of there's no regulation, if we don't talk about it and we don't raise it, they're just going to show up this summer, and we're all going to be like, why are the blocks here?
Yeah, okay, so everything...
They're not?
I don't think they will. I don't think there's... I mean, there are people who are going to be clamoring for them, but I don't think the city wants to see it anymore.
Okay.
I think more importantly, what Nick was saying is that they're not safe.
They're not safe.
And the only thing I can imagine is if individual restaurants wanted to put out the type that Nick talked about. That would be plausible.
Well, if they're also ugly, that's not helpful. So,
yeah, but they're safe.
But they're safe, right.
But the other sort of thing is that the city would have to have corresponding signage. There are certain... Supposedly that's a DOT regulation.
Right.
Signage and some kind of identification that they're there. And then, of course,
it was already pointed out about the ramps. We knew about that.
Yeah. The elephant in the room is that sitting outside at a restaurant is very desirable. And all of these restaurants want outdoor dining. And I don't blame them. When I go out in the summertime, I look for a place that has outdoor dining. I think a big problem that we have is that the former Mexican Radio and Oak Pizzeria are empty right now. And on one of the best blocks in this entire community. And I know for a fact that 537 Warren, former Mexican Radio, is nowhere near opening. I mean, I think we all know that. But they also put the architect on hold. So that's probably not even going to be open until next year. And so to me, when we talk about spending our time, and I'm at my desk alone, I'm like writing to Jody and Rita and being like, hey, ladies, like, what's up? Like, hey, what's happening with 537? Or trying to use my brain to think, maybe there's a pop-up from the CIA that can come in for the summertime. Like, Hudson is for better or worse, a tourist town, right? And we have a big influx of weddings, events, tourists coming here for more than just 3 months out of the summer. And we're not going to have enough places for them to park. We're not going to have enough places for them to eat. We're not going to have enough places for them to do a lot of things. And whether or not we like it, it's true.
I will say that a lot of very beautiful curated spaces are popping up without